managing the economy, conflicts between policies. The use of one macroeconomic policy can sometimes outweigh the impact of another, leading to policy conflict. Some possible examples include policies designed to meet environmental goals that might damage the competitiveness of domestic businesses in international markets. Measures to reduce inequality may have consequences for inflation, trade, and jobs. Expansionary fiscal policies involving higher government borrowing that have the effect, in the medium term, of driving inflation and interest rates higher. The effects of changes in interest rates on the distribution of income. The possible consequences of monetary policy decisions for a nation's trade performance, environmental policies, and competitiveness. There are many policy instruments available to a government to mitigate and reduce the impact of environmental damage on the economy. These include 1. Carbon taxes, for instance, a tax per unit of C0 to emissions produced. 2. Carbon trading schemes, a system where C0 to emissions permits are allocated/auctioned off, and then traded in markets. 3. Tough regulations/laws regarding pollution, waste disposal and health and safety, for instance. Maximum C0 to emissions per kilometers traveled for new vehicles, mandatory targets for recycling, and use of renewable energies. In many cases, there ought to be no long-term conflict between tough environmental policies and business competitiveness, profits and jobs. Successful businesses often regard reducing their environmental impact as an opportunity, rather than a challenge. There are profits to be made from innovation and research into lower carbon technologies. But regulations and higher taxes in the short term can lead to higher costs, and might undermine the competitiveness of a business in overseas markets whose rival firms do not necessarily face the same taxes or legislation. Airlines, for example, have long campaigned against a new tax on aviation fuel, arguing that this would drive costs up and reduce the economic sustainability of the industry. They prefer instead to be included in the EU emission trading scheme. Income redistribution policies and supply-side effects. A government concerned about income and wealth inequality, and looking to redistribute, has any policy options at their disposal. 1. Higher marginal income tax rates, for instance, a rise in the top rate of income tax to 50%. 2. An expansion of and higher levels of means-tested benefits such as income support and housing benefits. 3. A rise in wealth taxes such as inheritance tax and capital gains tax. 4. Increased government spending on skills, education and training, widening access to further and higher education for lower-income families. 5. An increase in the value of the national minimum wage. Again, many of these policies ought to be supportive of a stronger supply-side economic performance. For example, extra investment in skills training, for instance, an expansion of the modern apprenticeship scheme will yield benefits over the years by improving the flexibility of the labor force and raising productivity. A higher minimum wage for workers towards the bottom end of the pay ladder is an important strategy for improving work incentives, offsetting possible exploitation of poorly paid workers by unscrupulous employers. And an increase in productivity and consumer demand as workers spend their increased pay packets. But there are some possible conflicts with other policy objectives. Higher income tax rates might have a negative effect on work incentives and the willingness of people to start new businesses. Some critics of the new top rate of tax of 50%, due to be introduced in the UK in 2010, have claimed that it may lead to a backquote brain drain effect, with some top income earners moving overseas to avoid higher taxes. Successive increases in the real value of the minimum wage might lead to higher operating costs for labor-intensive businesses such as restaurants, hotels, catering, cleaning and security companies, and this could lead to some job losses, conflicting with an employment objective. The greater use of means-tested benefits is often a good way of targeting welfare assistance at those families who need it most. There can be a danger that means testing might increase the risk of a backquote poverty trap effect, where people face disincentives to work longer hours and earn extra income, firstly because they pay income tax and national insurance, and secondly because they stand to have their means tested welfare taken away as their gross income rises. In all three of these examples, I have put the word might in italics. Nothing is certain, and in each case, a strong counter-argument can be built. When it comes to income and wealth redistribution policies, there can be a fine balance to be struck between equity, fairness, and economic efficiency. Government borrowing and interest rates. In a recession, government borrowing automatically rises, because tax revenues decline and the government must also pay out more in welfare benefits. This is known as the working through of the automatic stabilizers. But fiscal policy might be used in a deliberate attempt to stabilize demand and production by increasing state borrowing, for instance through short-term tax cuts or higher public sector spending. Since 2007, there has been a huge rise in government spending as a share of GDP. Tax revenues have dipped, falling to around 40% of GDP, but there is forecast to be a budget deficit of 12% of GDP in 2010, one of the highest ever recorded fiscal deficits. Will this conflict with other policies and macroeconomic objectives? When the government borrows, it issues securities, for instance bonds and bills, to investors who are willing to buy them. This debt offers a fixed annual interest and is repaid at a set date in the future, for instance 3, 5, or 10 years later. The yield or rate of interest on the debt is calculated by the interest/market price of the bond, x 100%. Provided that the government is able to find sufficient domestic and overseas investors willing to bid for and buy up the new debt, the budget deficit should be financed without a rise in market interest rates. But by borrowing large sums, the demand for loanable funds in the economy is being increased, and this may cause a rise in interest rates. The rate of interest on 10-year government bonds is a benchmark for other borrowing costs, for example mortgage interest rates and the interest rate on corporate bonds. So if government borrowing leads to a general increase in interest rates, this might crowd out spending in other parts of the economy. Thus, an overly expansionary fiscal policy might have the effect of reducing capital investment and entrepreneurial risk-taking by private sector businesses, a possible conflict between fiscal and supply-side objectives. It could also risk causing faster inflation in future years, when the economy has recovered from the recession. When the global financial crisis reared its head in 2008, governments around the world acted quickly to prop up their economies with huge increases in spending. The scale of this increase was eye-watering, nowhere more so than in China. The figure announced by the Chinese government, 4 trillion yuan, 4 trillion which was about $560 billion at the time, is equivalent to 14% of GDP. This compares to 6% of GDP in the US and a mere 1.5% in the UK. Source: Brookings Institute. 18 months on, has it worked? When the figure was announced by China, There were a number of criticisms that there was not enough focus on increasing the level of consumer expenditure as the stimulus which was directed towards investment. The government also reduced taxes on exports. It was argued that the stimulus would only delay the economic problems rather than provide long-term growth. Two recent reports have indicated the extent to which the policy has been successful. Although Chinese exports were severely hit by the fall in global demand, the recovery has been dramatic and the growth in exports at the end of 2009 has seen China overtake Germany as the global export leader. The recovery in GDP has also been impressive and the rate of economic growth in 2009 has been maintained above the symbolic 8% level, and the final quarter of 2009 saw a return to double-digit rates of growth. The investment in infrastructure is also starting to show. The Chinese rail network is now one of the most advanced in the world. Trains, capable of speeds up to 250 km/h, zip between major cities, cutting journey times dramatically. The journey from Chongqing, a major city port on the Yangtze River, and Chengdu, the largest city in southwest China, has been cut from 10 hours in 2001 to less than 2 hours. 1A1B1C, 2A2B2C second, 3A3B, 4A4B 4C, 5A. Still, there are weaknesses. The provision of health and education are limited, particularly in rural areas, and the lack of expenditure in these areas by the Chinese government means that households are forced to save heavily in order to pay for the private provision of these services. This high level of savings means that efforts to stimulate consumer expenditure are unlikely to have much impact